What is going on, crypto family? So today we got the CEO and co-founder of Monolith. This was formerly called Token Card, right? So basically we talk about the rebranding, why he switched from Token Card to Monolith. We discuss a ton of the struggles of blockchain adoption, how he plans on solving it, as well as a bunch of other stuff. So please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the family. And I'll catch you on the other side. What is going on, crypto family? So today we've got Mel Gelderman with us. He is the CEO and co-founder of Monolith. It's formerly called Token Card. So thanks a bunch, Mel. Appreciate you coming on. Looking forward to getting to know you as well as all the stuff that you're doing, man. So where are you at in the world right now? What time is it there?
Hello, everyone. It's 5:15 here. I'm in London. It's in the evening. Thank you for the amazing introduction, by the way. Very well rehearsed, very professional.
That's what I'm all about, baby. Just professionalism, right? So awesome, man. Well, you got is that London in the backdrop there that I'm seeing? It looks like
correct. We're in Shoreditch. Correct. That's like the Silicon Valley equivalent of London.
Yeah, it's a great place, man. Lots of history.
Now that we're here, of course.
So yeah, there you go. Yeah, lots of history there in London and England and all those spots right there. So it's been a minute since I've been back, but it's always a great time. So cool, man. Well, tell us about yourself. How did you get into crypto, man? What's your story?
I guess I fell in love with Bitcoin back in 2013 or so, when I first read about it in some article, and then you start to read more into it. And at some point you realize that this might actually be a technology that fundamentally can uproot society, right? It doesn't, it's not like solar power that it tackles, climate change, like the end of the problem type area, right? It tackles issues we have globally at the root itself, right? Like Bitcoin for the first time promised a vision of a society where we've actually completely replaced the nature of the economy itself. And so that got me incredibly excited, of course. By the end of 2013, I was known at my university as Bitcoin Kid, and everyone was coming to me. I guess quite soon after, I decided to drop out and just completely go all in on this newfound passion.
What'd the parents think of that?
Well, they were this was the least crazy thing I'd gotten into since in a while. So before that, my parents' house was filled with they're called photobioreactors, which are these machines that you grow single-celled algae in, because I was one of the first people to play with algae biofuel back in the day. It's this was the least crazy thing I'd done in a while. So they were quite happy. And this seems to actually make me money.
Gotcha. So they're stop growing algae over there. And this crypto, that stuff's awesome, right? So that's not crazy at all. Nobody'd ever heard of it, but you just dropped out of school for it. So exactly. Awesome. Yeah. So you're over there, you're growing algae, you jump into crypto, your parents are it's cool, no problem, you're out of college, you're into crypto. So what happens then?
I actually really believed in this whole Bitcoin thing, right? It was still the early days, blockchain wasn't the main discussion yet. It was all about Bitcoin, and I kind of just canceled all my bank accounts, and I decided to actually live the Bitcoin life that we were all promised, right? I took it to heart, and so I just started traveling the world with just the Bitcoin wallet. I had mycelium wallet. So that was my main thing. Through that, I quickly found out you can't actually live in the world with Bitcoin, right? There's 5 places in the world that accept it. And so
I was going to ask him, how did you live off Bitcoin back in 13? Man, that's pretty rough. I remember trading.
Right. So what I would do is, other than using the first Bitcoin ATMs, so I helped place a few, but mainly it was all through local Bitcoins and mycelium, where you would meet people in real life and they would give you, Taiwan dollars or Thai baht or whatever, and you would give them Bitcoin. And this is how I actually got into the industry, because for people to actually do that in real life, they have to be just as passionate about Bitcoin as you were. And so quite quickly in Asia, I met amazing people who were all involved in it. I met, for example, 2014, I met Charlie Lee, creator of Litecoin, and the founder of Bitfinex, who's Dutch himself. I'm Dutch too. We all met in Hong Kong at this tiny 10-man meeting. And it was just surreal, right? That I was sitting there between all these amazing people who were all living their passion. And yeah, I kind of felt part of that group. I was, I just, I really believe this was the future and I felt like I could contribute. And so quite quickly, I got offered jobs at banks in Taiwan, where I consulted for two banks. And then later I joined a software company. And then, yeah, from there, things kind of got like really serious suddenly. About a half year after that, I found myself at this dinner with Microsoft, hosted by Microsoft Taiwan, sitting next to Vitalik just after Ethereum had launched. And I was like the biggest Ethereum fan in the world, or at least in my opinion in the world, at least in Asia for sure. And this guy from Microsoft was like asking Vitalik, like, but why smart contracts? What's like so brilliant about it? And Vitalik gave his technical answer, which was really good, but he still didn't quite get it. And so I found myself just like stepping in and full of like passion, like almost standing up halfway, you know, at the dinner table, like explaining to the guy like how transcendental this technology could be for society. And I just remember like looking to the side and seeing like Vitalik like nod, like look up at me, like saying that, you know, acknowledging that I made it at least a bit of sense. So I think that was like the tipping point. That's when I like decided I have to like really do something.
You got the nod from Vitalik. So you had to jump in. So you went from growing algae to working at banks to working at a software company to now basically creating smart contracts, right? So do you code yourself or do you have people that do it for you or how's this work?
Yeah. No, this is my big regret. So I never learned to code. I've got like a really good understanding of how software is built. But then when it actually comes to writing it, I can't do it. I will be learning it quite soon, hopefully.
Well, you better have Vitalik check in your code, buddy.
Exactly. So what kind of came out? I met my co-founder around the same time as that. And kind of from my own experience, trying to live the real Bitcoin life in the world, followed our actual products, right? Which was Token Card. Now we're like, we've just rebranded to Monolith. The platform is called Monolith. We got this idea for this platform that would run on Ethereum, where you could hold any ERC20 token and interact. Ultimately, it would lead to being able to interact with any dApp on Ethereum and actually being able to use this like altogether in real life as a substitute for your bank account, right? And that you would do that through like actually having a Visa debit card. And so that was the original platform, that you had this decentralized wallet where you yourself are in control, not us, right? You're not depositing it with us. You're holding it yourself in your own wallet on your phone, and you're able to spend it in the real world with the Visa debit card. Because then, you know, you could actually live the stuff that we all talk about, right? Like our industry, we're all so passionate about how Bitcoin is the future and how whatever cryptocurrency is the future, right? But the reality is like maybe only a handful of us actually live that, right? We either like all trade and speculate or we like hodl, right? But where's the living, right? There's none of it. And so that is ultimately the products we decided to build that, you know, like people who actually believe this is the future can like, you know, literally cancel their current bank accounts and step over to a purest Ethereum version of that. That's like, that ultimately now we're trying to build an experience that's like on par with your banking experience. But if the future of like this whole decentralized economy being built on top of Ethereum is true, and we think obviously it is, like ultimately it'll be so much better than anything a bank could offer you, right? Like, you know, the best interest rates, the best loans, the best insurances, you know, and that's just the start, right? In the future, you know, you could buy like real estate on the Ethereum network. You could like tokenize your own house and like put it up for sale to like a global economy, right? You know, your car keys in the future could be tokens that you hold yourself, right? Ultimately, where this is going is, you know, the bank account of the future isn't just like the app version of the old bank account that you're used to for the last century, right? The bank account of the future is going to be a lot more like Skyrim. It's going to be a lot more like, you know, like Zelda Breath of the Wild, where you don't just have your money, right? Your gold, right? You've got your swords, your cabbages, your potions, everything you own will be with you, right? And that can only be done on the blockchain. And that's the experience we're trying to build. You'll own your own identity in token form. Your data will be attached to that. You'll be able to, you know, like give access to and withdraw access from your data to services you use and don't, you know, don't use in the future. You'll be able to manage all your subscriptions in token form. You'll be able to, you know, you'll be able to like make like a ghost copy of the token that, you know, accesses your house, right? Your house key token. You'll be able to make a ghost copy for like your neighbor if they need to like
access your house
or something, right? Sorry?
In case they need to house sit or, you know,
yeah, exactly.
Raid your fridge while you're gone, right?
Exactly. And the token, like, you know, you can program it that the token like self-destructs like a day later, right? That it just disappears. Or you'll literally be able to see when they, you know, open the front door because it'll be, you know, they'll be interacting with the contract, the smart contract that represents the lock. Like, that's where we're going. And as it stands, all the like fintech future banking experiences out there are not thinking that. They don't realize this is the future of money. This is the future of everything. They're just building old banking with like a fresh app skin, right? Now, I only know like the European equivalents. I don't know quite the American ones. So like,
pretty
I think it's
same.
Like Cash App and like Venmo and stuff. They're cool, right? They're definitely a lot better than banking, like old school banking, but that's not where it's going, right? They're just like applying general technology to banking, which hasn't innovated in like a millennium. That's not a vision for the future. The future is so much more outrageous than they can imagine. The biggest innovation we've seen in the world, you know, I literally think is like the combination of blockchain plus virtual machines. And you know, it's the second generation of the internet. And the industry that as it stands to benefit most from it is like anything that has value, like money, like finance in general, the economy in general. And, you know, just like a fresh UI for your banking app isn't, you know, doesn't capture any of that, right? It's going to be completely transformational. And hopefully we're the ones pioneering that, right? But we're still at the beginning. It's still like the early 90s, right?
Yeah, we definitely have a long way to go. I mean, just getting people to use crypto is one of the biggest obstacles. And then the people that are in crypto don't want to spend it via credit card or via anything because they're hoping it's going to go back to the prices it was in 17 or early 18. Yeah. So well, right now we're building, you know, it's like the if you build it, he will come, right? That's what we're doing right now, right? We're building for the future of sorts. And, you know, I think the easier we can make things for people, the better it'll be. And, you know, obviously the more choices and more features and all these cool things you talked about are definitely going to help, but there has to be some education in the meantime, I think, to get people over into crypto. What's been one of the biggest, you know, hurdles and struggles you've seen so far? You've been in the space since 13. It's like you've been building for the past couple of years. You know, when you're talking about having a decentralized wallet and then people using, you know, basically a credit card to access those funds and spend them at, you know, convenience stores or wherever, are you actually seeing adoption there, or do you see most people just, you know, hodling?
So I think indeed we need to build like the all-encompassing experience without compromise, right? So as it stands, you likely have like a centralized exchange account with like Coinbase or whoever, you know, maybe that's got like your bank hooked up. You've probably got like a decentralized wallet on your phone if you want to like store your own stuff. Maybe you have like some cold storage. It's all like really fragmented, right? And that's because certain solutions offer benefits that others don't, right? Coinbase doesn't allow you to like completely be the only custodian of your money, right? Whereas like a hardware wallet does. But what we really need to build is an experience where fundamentally you are in control of your own money, because that is ultimately what crypto started out as, right? That you don't have to rely on like an exchange or like basically a bank, right? To like hold it for you and then lose it or do like other shady stuff with it. And then if we can actually make sure that people don't just hold like assets that they're only like that they're speculating with, right? Which has been for the largest part how our industry is being characterized, right? That like people get into crypto because it's so volatile and stuff. If we can, that's still like a very valid part of it, but that's not all of it. If we can get to a position where, you know, the person who's interested in crypto today can switch to a platform where he can have his like volatile speculative stuff like Bitcoin, like Ether, like any number of tokens, but also have like stable assets, right? That like, you know, that he can make sure he can pay his rent and all this other stuff. And that like, you know, he can always like sell a bit of his volatile stuff to, you know, take profits as he goes. But with having that experience, like in a decentralized fashion on the blockchain itself, in his own control, in his own wallets, rather than like with some service, I think, you know, if we can get there, if we can make like this MVP, this minimum viable product of a lifestyle product for crypto, then we'll start to see, you know, people actually move to this, right? Like there's so many people put so much money into this stuff. you want to be able to believe that this technology you're putting all your money into is actually viable as a future economy, right? Like you actually, you know, like I've got so many friends who've got a lot of Bitcoin, who've got a lot of Ether and whatever. And for them to be able to now switch to something that kind of like justifies their belief in this technology, in this new economy, you know, that they can actually go out there to their friends in turn and be like, well, here, I've got a card, right, that allows me to, you know, literally replace my bank card, right? And I'm the one that's fully in control of my money. And I don't hold pounds on this. I hold any number of assets on it. I literally hold gold tokens. I hold, you know, maybe in the future, hopefully Apple stock or whatever, right? I think if we can build that experience for the industry today, people will like kind of flock to it, right? If it's like, if it actually just like, just represents everything that we've all been hoping the industry would become in the future. And we're like at that, we're at that threshold right now.
Gotcha, man. So you're trying to build it. So yeah. What do you do, you know, with all the regulation? You know, like right now everybody's talking about, you know, being a money transmitter, right? So you get Facebook and Libra entering the space. What basically happens in the US here is probably going to trickle over to the UK and probably the other parts of the world regulation-wise. So if you have this decentralized platform you're speaking of, how decentralized will it really be if you're going to be acting as kind of a money transmitter for these customers?
Yeah, so the way it currently, and I can only speak from the UK or the European perspective,
sure.
But the way it currently works is that people have their Visa debit card, their Monolith card, and you have your own decentralized wallet, your own smart contract wallets on the Ethereum network. And when you're like trying to put funds on the card, you're literally authoring an Ethereum transaction that sends it from your wallet. You send it from your wallet to basically our backend where the amount of Ether or whatever token we receive, we're topping up that to the card immediately. And so that means that the card itself is essentially regulated in the old world. It's technically, it operates under an e-money license. So that's all like done well and regulated basically. And we have to abide by like incredibly high AML standards and anti-money laundry standards. So obviously a person when they sign up, they for the card specifically, the wallet they can download anytime. The card, they have to go through KYC, which only takes like 3 minutes. They take a selfie and they take a picture of their photo ID. And then if they pass that, the card will be sent to their home. But the way we basically got our arrangement with Visa was that we had to show to them that we think we can do, we can prevent money laundry through our platform, right? That we can actually do crypto in a safe way that like, you know, all these malicious people out there who have like drug money or whatever, don't use our platform to like turn it into like dollars or pounds or whatever. And the way we do that, we look at any crypto you send into your wallet. So even though we can't access any of it, we literally cannot seize it or do anything to get it, right? We can look at it because it's on the blockchain. And so what we told Visa is that we can actually do anti-money laundry checks better than any regular bank could because we can trace money all the way back to its origin. So we see if it's come from like a hacked exchange or like some darknet markets or like some Tumblr. And if it does, we simply, which it's only happened once so far. So it's like a really low percentage of people, at least on the Ethereum network, have any shady money. But this is how we make sure that we don't launder money for people. Gotcha. And that's been the most important thing for us. The other thing from the government perspective, however, we've been in the UK's FCA, Financial Conduct Authority, sandbox. They have this regulatory sandbox and they've put us in. And that's because they actually think we're a big step for consumer protection. So compared to any other crypto company out there that's like doing anything remotely similar, you know, whether it's an exchange or like some other custodial wallet service or a card even, if we disappear off the face of the earth tomorrow, all of our users still have their money, right? All of them. And that's compared to like any other service out there, you know, the moment they're offline, everyone's screwed. And this is the worst, like the thing that stresses the regulators most about consumer protection in crypto is that, you know, people are at the mercy of whatever unregulated company they decided to use. The fact that we've basically built a Coinbase-like service where the de facto, the standard position is decentralized for the user rather than centralized, is like, they think it's pretty cool. And like, they've been singing our praises, thankfully. So that's cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so the reason why they're able to, I guess, recoup their funds if, you know, you got hit by a bus or went out of business is because you're using smart contracts for their funds?
Yeah, well, so that's actually a thing we do in addition. So rather than having people store their funds in a key, right, which is how the industry is operated for the most part, the problem with that is if you get hacked, right, if you lose your key or if your key gets compromised, there's no recourse to you losing all your money, right? Like, it's done, right? And I've had a friend back in Taiwan who lost, you know, on the order of like $2 million back when Bitcoin was like, you know, $800, right? It's just insane. And so on Ethereum, we can literally program a smart contract to hold your money, right, in a way that you're happy with how it gets released. You can literally program how your money gets used. So the user still has a key, but they don't put the funds on the key. They put it in a contract that is owned by the key, right? So each of our users deploys onto the Ethereum network basically their own smart contract bank or like bank vault, right? And they are the owners of that, not us. The company has nothing to do with that. And so they can, for example, with that program, like a daily limit. So let's say they have 100 Ether in there and any kind of other token. They can like hard code into the contracts through our app that the contract will only release, let's say, 5 Ether per day. And so let's say that, you know, their key is compromised. They, you know, they left it lying around somewhere and someone gets a hold of it. The attacker will only be able to withdraw from this smart contract vault 5 Ether per day, right? And so rather than like losing all of his money overnight, which is like the standard scenario in our industry so far, they're only, you know, he's able to salvage the other 95 Ether by withdrawing it to the second function, which is the whitelist addresses. So the contract allows you to hard code 5 addresses that you trust, right? Which could be like your Coinbase deposit address, your friend, some backup you have in like a safety deposit vault or whatever, right? And you can then withdraw the 95 Ether that you still have to these addresses because they're like uncapped, right? And so even with that like basic setup, and that's just version one, version two protects against like even if you like just forgot your key, you didn't back it up or something. You know, the story of like the guy who lost his hard drive in like the garbage, you know, like
threw it away. Whatever, didn't think Bitcoin is ever going to be worth anything. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Like we're trying to prevent people just being a bit negligent with their key. And so we've got like a dead man switch function where after a certain amount of time, if you haven't used your contract vault, if the owner, the key, hasn't used the contract vault, it will, let's say after 6 months or after 3 months, you can program that, send it to an address that you choose, right? You can set it up as like an address that you own yourself, or you could like even set it up as like if you've done KYC with us, if you've like applied for the card, you can like even choose like token card as like a trusted intermediary that we can then later send it to like your new address.
So all of this is via smart contracts, somewhat decentralized, right? So that's how many guys you have, you know, coding for you right now, and what proficiency level are they at? Because this is a lot of money you could be looking at that you guys are responsible for.
Yeah, that's right. So we are currently 25 full-time employees. And they're all amazing. Like literally our team consists virtually entirely of engineers. So like I'm like, we have like one community manager and one marketing person, and that's basically it, right? And like, it's just the three of us like doing everything that's not engineering. But we have like one of the best engineering teams in London on this level. So awesome. Our CTO is basically a bit of a London like star, and he's like super passionate about decentralization. That's why he joined us.
Very cool. Yeah. What's live now and basically everything that you spoke about, when will that be live?
Yeah. So live right now, you can download our app, which will now be Monolith, on the App Store. Was originally Token Card, of course, on the iOS App Store. The Android app will be out very soon. I have it on my own phone, and it works. But there's like a bunch of stuff apparently that they still want to improve on it. You can apply for the token card through the app immediately. So the highlights of the stuff that is there right now is the moment you download the wallet, you deploy your own smart contracts, your own smart contract vault onto the Ethereum network, right? Which is already something that only two other wallets in the world do. You can customize that contract to fit your needs, right? Version 2 is coming quite soon. No timeline on that yet. Like, it's going through audits right now. Two audits have already been done by Trail of Bits, which is like Maker's auditor and one of our auditors in Seattle. And then you can apply for the token card, which is only available in the European Union. We'll be coming to the US hopefully very soon. So hopefully you'll be able to have one for yourself quite soon. Those are like the currently what we think is just about enough to allow someone who already has a lot of Ether or tokens on the Ethereum network to actually start living an Ethereum life. Stuff that's like right around the corner that we're like doing in the next 6 months is we're going to allow people to use a DEX within the app. So you're going to be able to like swap tokens, like immediately that you have some Ether and you can get some DAI or some Digix Gold or whatever. We're going to allow you to interact straight with Maker. So we just announced a partnership with MakerDAO. I'm saying this, this is like future, but I'm saying this in the past because this was recorded a bit before the announcement. But when this goes live, we'll have announced our partnerships with both MakerDAO and with DigixDAO, which are obviously two of the most amazing Ethereum projects. So we'll be integrating in the future Maker's CDP portal directly, that a person can basically create loans to themselves within our experience, that they can then, you know, spend their DAI and maybe like avoid, I don't know if that's the right word, but like prevent them having to pay capital gains tax. Hypothetically, I'm not a tax advisor. I don't know if that's possible or not, because they're not selling their Ether. They still have their Ether, but they're selling DAI. Anyway, that's consult your tax lawyer. So, and Digix, who have created this amazing gold token, which is one-to-one backs, and we'll be seeing if we can integrate that more deeply into the app as well as Compound, so people can get interest on their tokens, etc. After that, we'll be allowing people to do money in, that you can literally have your salary paid straight into your token card account, and that the moment it comes in, you can choose. You'll be able to choose, like, I want 50% of it to be like in DAI or in gold, you know, 20% of it to be in Ether and 30% in like whatever, right? That's coming as well. At that point, we think, you know, it's all on the road towards like actually creating like a banking replacement, you know, that is like actually cool and futuristic and good for the world, right? We literally just want to burn down all the banks around us here.
I'm sure they love to hear that. Awesome. Man. Well, lots of plans and ambitions, and, you know, we're definitely looking forward to all the stuff that you're going to bring to the space here. But more about yourself, man. What's maybe you got some talents or some skills that people don't know about. You got anything for us? Any hidden talents or skills that nobody knows? You're growing algae. So what else? Yeah. You speak to dolphins or, you know, paraglide or a squirrel suit jump?
I just love crazy stuff. I know. Maybe I'm like an adrenaline seeker, right? Like the idea of like doing outrageous stuff makes me happy.
Well, give us some examples. What's some examples of some of the crazy things you've done?
I think, so when I was like 14, I started to go paragliding. I don't know if you know what that is.
Of course.
Yeah, you like run off the side of a mountain with like this...
A kite, basically attached to a kite.
Yeah, basically a kite, right, that you control. And my longest flight was like 8 hours this one time. And the only reason I landed was because I had to like use the toilet. Like other people would literally do it in the air, but I think that's just awful. So I landed. But that was one of the first things that probably told my parents he's a bit, you know, out there. So,
yeah. so you stopped to use the toilet other than, you know, making it rain on people, right? So
we exactly.
Yeah, we appreciate you. Thank you. Yeah. What's maybe a talent or skill you don't have that you wish you did?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely wish, I could like, I want to be able to, I have a lot of visions in my head of how stuff should be, should work, should look like. I want to be able to build them myself as well. So ideally I'd indeed become like a programmer, or that I like become better at maybe like graphic design or something. You know, you've got like all the stuff in your head and you just want to, you know, you've got your own specific vision, even though like it's, you know, other people's vision is perhaps probably even better, but like you still want to make it real. So yeah. Yeah,
no, those are very grounded, you know, I guess skills, you know, program, graphic design, not, you know, be able to communicate with dolphins or something. So that's,
I mean, I can already do that.
But. Oh, there you go. Show us up here. Cool, man. Let's, you know, I mean, obviously you guys like the Space Odyssey, right? So that's where you got the name Monolith from. So what's maybe one of your favorite movies that you have out there?
I would probably say I like Jurassic Park because
violence and technology don't
exactly
make fellows. Yep.
There's nothing more exciting. Yeah, it's like
first there's oohs and ahs, and then there's running and screaming.
Yeah, exactly. It's just the whole premise of the movie is basically this crazy entrepreneur that builds something that's so futuristic and out there. And I just love that idea. Like, that's kind of the person who I want to be.
That's awesome.
So, probably Jurassic Park is up there. Maybe like Event Horizon. Because have you seen Event Horizon?
Oh, yeah.
It's like realistic horror, right? It's like we genuinely don't understand space, right? Like, you know, what is the universe even?
Yep.
And so, you know, imagine, yeah, like literally, you know, what happens if we do go through like a black hole or whatever, like, you know, phenomenon that we haven't even discovered yet. Like, you know, the idea that there are other dimensions out there or whatever, like that's spooky, right? That's like grounded horror. Like that could actually be real to some degree or other. So I find that really cool.
So you think there's other dimensions out there?
Well, there's definitely the Ethereum dimension, which we're hoping to be real. But I think maybe, yeah, I think the chance that our current reality is the only reality, like statistically just is unlikely. It seems to me that like reality is just one of like probably an infinite amount of possibilities, right? Where like the laws of nature are like shuffled up every time, like, and you know, basically inconceivable other realities and dimensions exist, and that we just happen to inhabit one, you know, corner of one dimension.
Might be right. I mean, not too far from you, there's a place called CERN where they have that super collider, and they talk about it. There's multiple dimensions they've located. So who knows, man?
Yeah, who knows?
I've never seen it, but that doesn't mean it's not real, right? So There's a lot of smart people up there. What about time travel, man? So if you had a time machine, you could go forward in time or you could go back in time. Any time, doesn't matter, but you had to stay there. What time would you go to and why?
I mean, yeah, I'd probably go to the 90s. That sounds like a safe choice. just because everything just felt so cool. But like I grew up in the 90s, so I can't, as an adult, I can't evaluate what it was like, obviously.
So Mel was rocking out with Nickelback back then. Yeah.
Well, probably, yeah. But I think people, like I genuinely think that we live at the most interesting point in time now. Like we're literally on this cusp. Like the next 100 years are going to be so incredibly like surreal, right? With like technology going exponential and all this new stuff happening, we really have no idea what stuff is going to look like in 50 years. And it's probably going to be a lot more crazy. Like, well, I think from like one of the founders of Linux once said that when they were thinking about the future of computing, they were like super wrong in the short term. They thought that in like 3 years, things would be like evolved a lot more than they expected, or the other way around. They thought like that things would progress really quickly in the short term, but they were like wildly wrong about how far, or like they were completely right about how our, I mean,
yeah. I know what you're saying. Basically, people always overestimate what they can get done in 1 year versus 10.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, they were, yeah, like computing was even more crazy than they imagined in the long run. And I think that's true for us as well, that, you know, the next 5 years, sure, it'll be kind of, life will be kind of similar, but 30 years from today, we can probably barely comprehend what technologies have become daily realities around then. You know, yeah. Like people imagine that we'd all be walking around with smartphones, you know, like 10 years ago even. And it's only going to get crazier. And I think, you know, we're like the generation that is allowed to like witness this transcendence, right? Where we like, you know, go from one era of civilization to the next, right? We go from like modern civilization to literally like sci-fi space age singularity-esque civilization, right? And I think that's what attracted me to Ethereum, because, you know, for the first time, Ethereum gave us a promise, a vision for how we could implement technology on like a societal level. You know, like so far we've only seen technology impacts like the more practical stuff in our lives. But like Ethereum for the first time showed that we might even be able to completely replace our economy, completely replace our governments and how we interact with each other. You know, how ownership is defined. And that's just insane. And so, yeah, I think it's... I mean, it's basically the most exciting time to be alive right now. So
yeah, I don't disagree, man. If you look how far we've come in the past 100 years and change, from a wagon and a wheel to stealth bombers to freaking space shuttles to satellites to cell phones, imagine what it's going to be in the next 100 years or so. It's pretty incredible for sure. I definitely share your sentiment. But yeah, I know it's getting late there. You know, we've been going for close to an hour. And so we look forward to, you know, seeing all the cool stuff that you're going to bring to space. We'll make sure we get the links out for people so they know where to go and download the app and check out Token Card, the new branded monolith. So appreciate you, Mel.
Crazy. It'll blow your mind.
Awesome, my friend. Well, we'll get this out as quick as we can for people. God bless, man. And we'll catch you on the next one.
Thank you so much, Crypto Beatles, for having me on. Goodbye, everyone.
Welcome back, everybody. Huge thanks to Mel. I appreciate you, buddy, coming on and telling us all the cool stuff that you've done and that you're doing in the space, man. Keep us posted for sure. And for people that want to go to Vegas and come hang out with us, make sure you guys buy your tickets to the World Crypto Conference as soon as possible, because it goes up every single month. And every Monday, we're going to pick a winner that can come hang with us at our after party. Simple. All you do is you buy your tickets, shoot me an email, let me know that you entered, and then we'll pick a winner on Mondays. And somebody's going to be able to come hang out with us and have a great time. It's going to be awesome. Make sure you do it. If you guys want to come to Vegas and hang with me and a bunch of other people, it's gonna be cool. Just a friendly reminder, Crypto Beatles shows are never financial advice, recommendations, or trading strategies. The views expressed here are solely that of Robert Beatles and his guests. Robert Beatles is the co-founder of the Monarch Wallet, host of Trading View Sessions, Crypto Beatles on YouTube, and on several entities. Robert's opinions here do not reflect that of those entities. Some information shared here may not actually be factual. These shows are for information and entertainment purposes only. Never invest a single Satoshi or penny in anything without first seeking the counsel and advice of a professional financial advisor. Robert Beatles is not a financial expert or advisor. Investing in anything is super dangerous. You can lose all of your money, so always trade at your own risk. Please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the fam. All right. God bless you. Love you. Till the next one. Talk to you soon.